So yeah, everybody's rushing over there. Even the assistant district attorney came, you know, came with us to serve the warrant. There were some uniformed officers that came to actually serve the warrant. And they decided to do it as a no knock so that we were rushing to get there, because after 10 o'clock, then we couldn't do it. We could do, go ahead and do it because we did get a no knock search warrant, but we didn't want to push that envelope. So we got there in time, and the time that the warrant was actually served was at 9:58. So we had 2 minutes left. You know, the officers got in, they basically put him in handcuffs, restrained him. And there were some interviews that started with him. And then me and the detective immediately went over to the computer with the assistant district attorney, and we started triaging everything. And it was confirmed. It was information that was coming from a foreign country. Hello, welcome to our podcast, Digital Forensics Redefined. I'm your host, Calvin Weeks.
And I'm your co-host, Rob Walensky. There is only one truth, but multiple techniques to find the truth with digital forensics. We explore those various methods by examples of real cases and incidents where digital forensics was either used or not used, and how that affected the outcome. Calvin, tell us about today's show topic.
Yeah, so this case that I worked, it comes back from 2002 timeframe, just post 9/11, and we were briefed by the FBI about the kind of things to be watching out for terrorist-like activity. And one of the things that they had said was, you know, be acutely aware of, you know, activity from foreign countries, right, on computers and near networks and things like that. So we had a case where we identified some traffic where somebody was using a computer to download information from a foreign country, and it definitely caused us problems.
So how do you know that it's a foreign country that's doing it, or how do you identify that?
Well, whenever we had our network systems, we're able to show where the connections are, and through geolocation, where, you know, forensic geolocation, where it's easy to identify where that traffic is going to and from.
So somehow you're flagged that something's going on from some foreign entity.
Yeah. So how this happened, we were working on a Saturday, which normally we were not working. The area that we were at was completely closed, but we were there doing some maintenance. And we were about ready to get it wrapped up. It was about 5 o'clock in the evening and afternoon. And we noticed that on one of the computers, the mouse was moving by itself. There was nobody sitting at the computer. And they actually started, you know, browsing out, doing different things. And we could see they were connecting to a foreign country. And we knew, we could identify, you know, at least that it was a foreign language, because we could see, I mean, it was a language I couldn't read. Then we had to start identifying where they were coming from, try to figure out what was going on.
So anytime my computer does crazy stuff, or my mouse starts working by itself, or I'm on a website maybe I shouldn't be when the wife walks in the door, I blame it on some foreign entity.
Well, yeah, you know, it was the aliens that landed in your backyard that caused you problems.
So anyway, I mean, obviously, even from a lay standpoint, if you're looking at your computer and the mouse is doing things and things are being clicked on and it's functioning somehow, that's obviously an indication that there's some problems. So how do you guys handle that in your environment?
Well, what we had done, obviously, we knew that it was unauthorized activity, but we had 60,000 employees. And, you know, yeah, we have, you know, people from other countries that would speak other languages. So we wanted to find out if it was an employee or not, but we knew it was unauthorized activity. We quickly identified that it was not any user that we could identify, because the way that they were gaining access to that computer was like a way that a hacker would do it. It was not any through any legitimate means, because employees could do that, but not in the means that they were, that this person was doing that. We were able to trace all the information down of where they were located. We knew that they were in another building within the town that we were located. And we, at that point, we had enough information to show that it was unauthorized. It was not an employee, and we need to turn it over to law enforcement immediately. So at that point, it was about 7 p.m. at night, and I was on the phone with detectives, briefing them on the case.
So obviously this is a complicated subject and we're talking about it and trying to simplify it, but how do you explain that to you? I was a longtime detective. If somebody called me and said, my computer's not working right and my mouse is doing funny things by itself, you know, I'm probably going to, you know, assess their mental competency. That sounds like something that happens to me every time I use a computer. So how do you identify it and then explain it to somebody and that needs to be investigated?
Well, because of the place that we worked, we had ongoing relationships, very close relationships with the detectives that did the electronic crime investigations. And so this was a direct phone call. We didn't call 911. So that's how we were able to get a hold of law enforcement and tell them what was going on. And yeah, I mean, they acted immediately. So all this is on Saturday, and we ended up working through the night. It was pretty interesting.
So where you were, they have a unit, a police unit that actually looks into cybersecurity or whatever this realm this is.
Yeah. Especially when it touches it possibly, there's a possibility that it could be terrorist-like activity. You know, we had no definitive proof, but I mean, when you're not in law enforcement, that's not our job. We'll deal with the hacking into the computer, if you will, from a company standpoint, but then law enforcement would handle any criminal investigation. So that was the next logical step. We knew what happened internally. We were ready to go and figure out what we needed to do internally. We were going to rebuild the machine, lock everybody out. But of course, we're not doing that until we definitely get law enforcement involved and figure out what they want to do for their potential criminal activity.
So what did law enforcement, what do they do? Do they come to the scene? You give them access to a computer or?
Yeah, and in this particular case, the detective, he come on site and wanted to start gathering, and he utilized our resources because we performed forensics. We had a full forensics unit, incident response and everything as well. So we worked very closely together. So he knew that on a Saturday afternoon, it's going to be easier for us to gather that. So he supervised us gathering all the evidence to get that over. In the meantime, he also reached out to the local district attorney because obviously once we get probable cause statement kind of written up, we're going to have to get this before a judge so that we can get a search warrant to go to this location where this person was at to seize their computer to continue the investigation to find out if it's terrorist activity, who's doing it, and get all that stuff taken care of. So during that time, then the assistant district attorney got involved. He come on site as well. So Now we're talking about 8 o'clock at night and on a Saturday, and we're writing up a probable cause affidavit at that point.
So you were able to identify a location where this was being done from outside of your entity.
Correct.
And law enforcement responded to assist you. And I'm assuming if they're applying for search warrants and judges are involved and the DA's involved, that there would, that they followed through with us that night or shortly thereafter.
Yeah. So, because who was involved with the investigation so deeply was myself and the detective. And so here we go. We've got the probable cause affidavit. We go to a judge, and again, a judge is working. So we find the on-call judge, go to his house. So at 9 o'clock at night, we're sitting around his table and we're swearing out that affidavit and, in our jurisdiction where we were at, why we applied for that, I'm not sure, but the ADA decided that they wanted to apply for a no-knock search warrant. And for those of you that don't know what that is you get to serve around the clock. You don't have to knock. You can just bust down the door and, seize whatever drugs or, weapons or anything like that. And they're mostly reserved for the most serious of crimes. But
and this judge, he wasn't looking at you sideways in his robe at his table or anything?
Well, I think he just wanted us out of his house. So he's like, you guys swear that this, you're telling the truth, you need this? Yes, Your Honor. And so he's signing off on it. But the ADA, and of course, we all knew that's kind of shaky anyway. But we knew there was a risk, right? Because if this was truly terrorist activity, it could be warranted, right? It could be. But at the end of the day, we wanted to make sure that we didn't cause any problems with the investigation. So it's 9 o'clock at night. And, you know, if it's not going to be a no-knock warrant, it has to be served before 10 p.m. So everybody's rushing to the scene.
So what is the urgency? I mean, I get it if you're getting a no-knock warrant because, you know, someone's distributing fentanyl or hurting somebody or whatever. What's the urgency at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night?
So because the potential that it could be terrorist activity, the computer that we did have access to, which was our computer, was being used like a pass-through gateway. So we could see the traffic going, you know, back and forth, but we didn't have that final destination. Of course, we knew one of them was in a foreign country. We're not going there, you know, at 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
So we had to go to the location that was right there in the town. So that's the kind of the critical thing. We need to know, what is this data? Is it truly terrorist activity or not? Well, we need access to the actual data, not just seeing that it's coming from a foreign country to another location in town. And they were using our computer illegally and unauthorized to be able to be that gateway to be able to get it.
Sure.
To their computer.
Just out of curiosity, is there some reason that they chose that computer or your computer versus any other computer in the Southwest United States?
Yeah. After they were interviewed, the particular location that we had, that we were at, it had the, for an agency with, you know, a company within the entire state of Oklahoma at that time, we had the largest bandwidth. We had the most capability of transmitting data back and forth. So to this person, he said, this is why he did that, because obviously our computers were much faster, and getting that from a foreign country, that made it much easier. And then from that computer to his computer was fast, but from his computer to that foreign country was not fast.
Sure.
So that was his reasoning.
So what ultimately happened? What happened to the individuals or?
So yeah, everybody's rushing over there. Even the assistant district attorney came with us to serve the warrant. There was some uniformed officers that came to actually serve the warrant, and they decided to do it as a no knock, so that we were rushing to get there, because after 10 o'clock, then we couldn't do it. We could go ahead and do it because we did get a no knock search warrant, but we didn't want to push that envelope. So we got there in time, and the time that the warrant was actually served was at 9:58. So we had 2 minutes left. You know, the officers got in, they basically put him in handcuffs, restrained him. And there were some interviews that started with him. And then me and the detective immediately went over to the computer with the assistant district attorney, and we started triaging everything. And it was confirmed. It was information that was coming from a foreign country. But what we noticed immediately was, it was like, I would say, from that country, there were kind of like Hollywood movies, but they were in a foreign language. There was music, there was, files and all kinds of stuff. And during the interview, he said that he was doing that because he was here from another country on a student visa, and he didn't have any movies or any music or anything that was in his native language. So this was his way of getting all of those entertainment type files and stuff. Sure. So that he could listen to it. So if serving that warrant at almost 10 o'clock at night and finding out he was here on a student visa, he still committed a crime because it was unauthorized to use, a third party computer like that, even though it was faster for him. It was totally unauthorized. So that was still a crime, even though the investigation ended up not being terrorist activity, but he ended up getting deported out of the whole thing.
Sure. But I guess the point of the whole thing is you don't know until you go through the process and go through all those means that you described to identify the source and what the purpose is.
Yeah. I mean, you've been in law enforcement. I've been in law enforcement to to have a crime happen at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 p.m., and to go from there to a search warrant to serving that search warrant, you know, by 10 o'clock that night is just rare. It's unusual. I mean, it does happen for the large crimes, you know, the big crimes. And of course, I guess initially the concerns was it could be terrorist activity, but at the end of the day, it wasn't. So sure. That turned out good, but it was, you know, it was everybody, all hands on deck there, you know, really quick, really fast. And it was good to see, you know, not only private sector, local law enforcement, district attorneys, you know, working together along with the judges to actually get everything resolved as quick as possible and take care of it. So sure. I guess thankfully it wasn't a terrorist activity, but it could have been.
Any final thoughts? Any other things we add before we conclude for the week?
Well, you know, I think looking at this particular case, and it struck me that this is kind of key and important because, you know, if somebody's looking for digital forensic services, you may not know exactly where that evidence is. You may not know exactly what that evidence is. But moving quickly is very vital and important to get a handle on all the evidence and truly know what's going on. So if there was anybody out there needing digital forensic services, don't hesitate, reach out to the experts so that we can handle that appropriately so you don't lose valuable evidence that then you wouldn't be able to help prove your case or win your case or handle whatever the situation that you might be.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us on Digital Forensics Redefined, our podcast this week. Please join us next time for a new episode to help you find the truth in data with digital forensics.
Thanks for joining our podcast this week, brought to you by Defense Forensic, where we find the truth in data.
Also, check out our website at defenseforensic.com for more information on the services available for individuals and organizations that require expert analysis of digital evidence.
And once again, thanks for watching and join us next week for a new episode. And remember, the truth is out there.